Welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and I am joined once again by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back. For today's episode, we're finishing an interview with Reverend Mike Mather of Broadway UMC in Indianapolis, Indiana. Mike inspired our neighboring movement direction and some of the things that we do. We have an episode before this where we interviewed him. And so if you haven't heard that, please go back and check it out. And then it was so good that we just included all the things that he said, which meant that it got kind of long. And so this is episode 2 of that interview.
We also want to take a moment to promote Mike's book that just came out this year. The title of the book is Having Nothing, Possessing Everything, Finding Abundant Communities in Unexpected Places. And we'll put a link to that in the description of this episode. I want to say it is a fantastic book. It's well written, and it's based on years of trial and error and innovation. So it's written from a place of like real experience, and it's really great stuff.
Especially for like church professionals who want to do neighboring through that perspective, it's really, it really is a good book.
Yes.
So yeah. We enter the interview for today as we were asking Mike to talk about some ways that he pushes people to shift their focus away from the issues of their needs and instead to start thinking about the gifts of, and assets within the neighborhood. His answer is awesome and shows that it's a very innovative way of approaching it, which is something that Mike brings to all the work that he does.
Well, I think several things. One is we've hired young people who live in our neighborhood and paid them to meet their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And again, when you think about just what you're saying, I mean, what's on the television every night describes their neighborhood in bad ways. The place they get bussed out to school describes their neighborhood in bad ways. Yeah. But what they see, because they've been doing this now 11 years in the neighborhood, is now they talk about their neighborhood in completely different ways, right? And so it just takes kind of the constant attention to doing that. In worship, what it's meant for us is we added a thing in worship every Sunday morning that we call the lesson from the contemporary church, because God didn't stop speaking when the book went to press, but continues to write in our own lives and stories. Yes. So we treat it just like every other scripture lesson we read in church, but we have somebody come and talk, somebody who people might have thought of as needy, but they come and talk about the thing they care deeply about. We have 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids come talk about how much they love bicycles and why they do and the feeling of freedom they get when they're riding the bicycle and loving the feeling of wind as they move around and it moves around them and how they're able to go so much farther than they could if they were walking someplace. And so they talk about that and why that's meaningful to them. Or, you know, a young man in his 30s who just got out of prison who comes and talks about how while he was in jail, he started listening to the music of Nas, and how one of the things Nas says is that you should learn a different word every day. So he'd been learning a different word every day. And because of that, he had fallen in love with poetry, and he particularly loved the poetry of Maya Angelou. And he talked about that and why that helped him understand things like his grandmother, who he lived with and and was caring for. And you know, another young woman in our community who surprised everybody when we were talking to her about what she cared and loved about. And she talked about how she listened to opera. And it was like, you listen to opera? She says, yeah, I love that. And, you know, when we were talking about this, there was a guy in the congregation named Felipe who was singing in the Indianapolis Opera. And he said, hey, would you want to go over with me and take a tour of the opera? I can show you. And and by the way, I think there's a perfect song that you and I could sing together in church that's made for our range of voices. And so, right? But if we'd never paid attention to it, we would have never known, right? if one is going to exist either as an individual or as a group or as part of an institution, right, built around abundance, that means structuring yourself differently. Because our structures are all around scarcity and our practices around them are all around scarcity. The biggest challenge is not in seeing the world this way. I think you all have talked about this too, that people love often this way of looking at and thinking about it. Because it jives with how we really think and it jives with what we know of our own lives. The issue is we don't have practices that go along with it. So one of the things in our place that we've done is created a game to celebrate this. So like we have 12 things that you can score a point on, you know, like celebrating the gifts of somebody. And we started it out just among the staff. And then one of our lay leaders said, what are you guys doing? And we said, well, we're playing this game, you know. And well, what's the game? Well, we showed it to him. And the thing about the game is whoever scores the most points in a month has to buy cupcakes for everybody else, you know. But so you think that would not help, but it does. I mean, in that, you know, it trains our minds to think about things different. So we have these 12 practices, and one of them is celebrating someone publicly for their act of discipleship, for what they do. So the Sunday after we had talked about this with some of the lay people who asked about it, during the celebration service, during that time when we stand up and say something about other people in worship, this guy, Albert, got up and said, I just want to say something about Margaret over here. Margaret, stand up. Everybody, I want you to know that whenever somebody moves into Margaret's neighborhood, she goes over and welcomes that person. And she takes them on a walk around the neighborhood and shows them where other people live and who lives where and where you can go shopping and where you can catch the bus and things. And he says, whenever Margaret does that, I keep thinking of where it talks about in Hebrews welcoming strangers unawares, and that's what Margaret does. And then as he sat down, I saw him turn to somebody else and say, I scored a point. You know, yeah, and people laughed, and in the laughter that was them joining that moment, right, and becoming a part of that. So I just think the hard thing is not seeing things this way. The hard thing is stopping doing things that are built around scarcity so that you have room to pay attention to the abundance around you.
I just was thinking about this because we have, there's a funeral tomorrow of a very amazing, talented, gifted woman who was at our church. And the pastor who's doing the funeral emailed several of us and said, what are the stories of the giftedness you see, you saw in her life? And I was like, wow, I wish we would have done that
when she was alive.
She was alive.
Yeah.
Like, and why don't we do that all the time with people when we're still around to share those giftedness?
So we developed some practices around that. We started it with young people. We started holding meals with individual young people, and their families have to be there, but they can invite anybody else they want to. And we would invite some people. And then what happens is, after everybody eats, we go around the table and ask everybody who's there to tell the young person what gifts they see in that young person's life. And then we ask that young person, after everybody's gone around, tell us what you think your call is in your life. What do you think you're going to do with your one wild and precious life, right?
Yes.
Then we turn to everybody once the young person's spoken and say, so does anybody have anything they want to offer to what this young person has just said they think their call is in this life? And then the young person comes to the middle of the room and we lay hands on her or him and bless them. Well, you know, we had the first two young people who we did this with come and talk to the governing council at Broadway about their experience with this. And they did. And when they left, people were like, why are we doing this just for young people? You know, and we took years before we started expanding it much. But when we expanded it, the next group we expanded it to was shut-ins. And oh my gosh, seeing that was amazing. And now, again, just starting to do it with more and more people because it is. Where else in this society do you get that?
Right.
But it is a set of practices. It should be in the United Methodist Book of Worship.
Right?
Yes, you know, it should be.
I don't want to have to die for some reason. What are you noticing as far as, like, you know, our nonprofit is called Neighboring Movement, not because we own the movement, but because we really believe it is a movement. And so how are you seeing neighboring and this abundance focused work kind of bubbling up on, like, a larger, like, outside of ourselves scale?
You know, one of the things that's nice about visiting you all is seeing it in relationship to faith-based stuff, because I see it a lot more not related to faith-based stuff. Our part of our language in churches and stuff is so oriented around us feeling good about supplying the needs of others that it's really hard to get through to those places, I think, harder.
Yeah.
Because the culture is so much built up against it. People who are used to thinking more practically.
Yes.
Some little jab at the church.
Well, I mean, it's true, right? Is and again, I spend a lot of time in the church and talking about this in the church. I believe and think that once we get this figured out, the churches will be the best delivery system for this,
yes.
Right?
That is so true.
But right now, it's not true. Mm. So where I see it happening is in a lot of citizen-based efforts in local communities. I see it in First Nations groups up in Canada. I see it in groups of women in Iowa who are getting together to talk. Unfortunately, I don't see it a lot in religious communities, and most of my experience with that is with churches, but even with Jewish communities, mm-hmm. Islamic communities, it's very much very similar to that. Our religious identity is tied up a lot with, you know, helping the others who are poor slobs as opposed to ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's the primary obstacle there?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know what I think the primary obstacle. I mean, I do think the practices and the language, you know, if something's new, I got to tell you, even in a lot of, like, the new church things that are happening these days, emerging church movements, around mission and stuff, they're all pretty...
choosing words wisely.
They choose to act in that way in old ways, everything else they're trying to do in new ways.
Yeah, submerging.
Well, and I think part of that, though, well, I don't know, this could get off into a weird place, but, like, part of that is, like, it's hard to build institution around this asset-based work because it's so... I mean, it's not anti-institution, but the institution does not hold on to power in the same way when I'm trying to actually go and see the giftedness of someone else and enrich my, you know, the community because I'm noticing and shining a light on their giftedness.
You know, Diamon, when he was first doing the roving listener work, came up with some really good practices for that with institutions like the church and like the development corporation in our neighborhood. Is after a week, he would have a gathering of the people he had met that week in one of the homes on the block he had been on. And he would invite people from the development corporation and the church to come, but he would explain to them that they were not allowed to talk. Yes. They had to just come and listen as the neighbors talked with each other about their giftedness. A few years ago, the young people during the summer several years ago had invited 60 of their neighbors to come together for a conversation over 2 days. And they had invited leaders of not-for-profits and businesses, for-profit businesses in our community to come, but it was primarily focused on the not-for-profits, and stand around on the outside of this circle of 60 neighbors as they talked. And again, they weren't allowed to speak. But at one point, they were taken out to another room, and another friend of ours met with them and said, okay, what did you hear? You know, you all talk about yourselves as public servants. So in order to be servants and not masters, if the people you were listening to were the masters, then what did you hear that you can do to play a role to support what the masters were talking about. And just that way of framing the story a little differently, to because we in the church, we love to talk about servanthood, but we usually set the agenda.
Right. Yep.
I mean, yeah, that's the problem. People in the church, we often talk about, how do we get people engaged? Well, it's the wrong question. It's how do we engage ourselves with what the Spirit is doing in the lives of people around us?
We don't always go super like religious on this podcast. Just for some of our listeners, they may be like, why are they so Christian-y today? But I think we got to go there when we got
Mike
Mathers.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the questions I literally get from, like, because I'm United Methodist clergy like you, and I'm outside of the normal systems, and the people who are my supervisors ask me all the time, how is this discipleship? Mm-hmm. How are you really, do you ever tell people about Jesus? How is this discipleship? So I guess I need to give them a good answer. So could you give me one?
Well, I have several answers to that. I think what discipleship is, it's not what is done in and through the agency of the church, but what's done in and through the agency of our lives. And the church, though, can name that as Christian and as affected by and influenced by Jesus's life, death, and resurrection. We were talking a little while ago about this woman in our congregation named Hope Tribble. And Hope works in the mayor's office in Indianapolis. And through her work, she brought something called the Bail Project to Indianapolis, which will mean that over the course of the next year, there will be over 1,000 people who will be bailed out of jail in Indianapolis, who are in jail for nonviolent misdemeanors, for bail as low as $100 or $50, but don't have enough money to get bailed out. Over 1,000 people will be bailed out over this next year. Mm-hmm. At annual conference of the United Methodist Church, we will celebrate the ministry of the laity, and what will be celebrated there will be vacation Bible school, mission trips, soup kitchens, after-school programs. Mm-hmm. What will not be celebrated is somebody standing up and saying, because of what Hope Tribble did, there are over 1,000 people who won't be separated from their families. There will be over 1,000 people who won't lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. What she has done, she would tell you, is because she believed that when Jesus read from the scroll of Isaiah in Luke 4 in his hometown and said, the prisoner is set free, and that this has come true today in your hearing, she believed that and acted on it.
Right.
So to me, the power of the church is to name the discipleship that people live in their lives in the world and say, this is what she's done. And yeah, she would talk about that and say it in that way herself, that this is why she did that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If people hear and see that, then they begin to think, oh, this is what discipleship is.
Yeah.
We've convinced people that what discipleship is vacation Bible school and the mission trip and the soup kitchen.
Right.
In fact, our seminaries often train us to look at the people in our congregations as if they're people who aren't disciples and who don't haven't lived it out.
Yeah.
And so, they, you know, we're taught to go and teach them well, rather than we're taught to go and see the ways they live it out. And if we point that out and celebrate it and shine a light on it, I bet it's a little bit like the parable of the talents.
Yes.
It would multiply over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people often ask us, is what you all are doing scalable? And we say, no, mm-hmm. it's not, but it is multipliable.
Oh, God. Yes. That is happening. That line is happening. Yes. I'll pretend that I came up with it.
Yeah.
That line is happening.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, so yes, we do talk about Jesus, but I think a lot more important than talking about Jesus is actually believing.
Yes.
Actually looking at the world like he invites us to look at the world. To see it the way he invited us, challenged us, banged his head against a wall to get the disciples to see and us to continue to see. I think that's the real challenge. We often have conversations with economists and people who work with prisons and poets and people who see and know and believe something. But one of the difficult things for me is we will go and talk with economists who are doing really interesting work, much like we've been talking about here. Mm-hmm. And they will say to us, why would somebody from a church want to talk with us?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't believe we're serious partners about this, that we're interested in doing anything besides mitigating poverty rather than being a witness to the fact that there's all this giftedness that we're having a hard time keeping up with.
That's so good.
One last question that, that's on my mind, and I appreciate your time, but I'm just thinking about, so far, the folks who listen to this podcast are, you know, don't have churches, they don't have nonprofits, they're just folks, you know, in their neighborhood. Any word that you would offer to them, as a person who's been seeing this unfold for decades now, you've been watching this work, the people who are listening to this podcast, they are members of this movement, right? And so I want to encourage them. And so anything you would offer to them.
Sure. Well, we really think that one of the most important things there is, one of the most important powers that people have is social capital. And I think I've heard you all talk about it a little bit, but around our place, what that means is, and by our place, I don't mean our church. I mean around our lives. We have parties, and not parties at the church building, parties in people's homes. And those parties are for no apparent reason. There's not an agenda of trying to get people to sign up for anything or join anything. It's just a party. So we'll invite, you know, Leslie to come and sing and, you know, Alicia across the street to bring some food to it. And January to recite a poem. And anything else that happens at the party is gravy, you know, but just those things happen and people are just meeting one another. And one of the things that's really important is that we be really intentional when we're gathering people, that we gather the people who we really are connected to, both locally and otherwise. So we always have these parties, as we say, in the hood, right? But we always invite, like we invite the police chief. We invite the head of the Central Indiana Community Foundation. And they're just to be there and to be themselves and to have a good time. And we don't, again, it's just to begin to build the type of connections that keep people out of trouble. You know, it's not, I mean, we all got in trouble. We've all done stupid things, right? But many of us have had friends who've helped to get us out of that. That's what we're trying to do, is cultivate friendship further and find a way that people will get to know each other deeply and well enough that it breaks down those walls that we all put up and have with one another. So less meetings and more parties, I think, would be a general rule for life.
I think that should be the tagline for your church.
Well, I think it should be a tagline for our lives, right? When I sit and hear people talk about meetings they go to, I'm not talking about church meetings. I'm talking about any meeting.
They're all lame.
They're all, they're life draining. And very rarely does, I think, will I look back at the end of my life and think, man, am I glad I was at that meeting?
If I could have just squeezed one more meeting in.
But I can think of several times when I will think, man, I am so glad I was at that party. I'm so glad I got a chance to have that conversation with Trina and with the chief, or so glad I got a chance to hear January recite My Hood is Dope. So glad that I could taste Alicia's vegan hot chocolate. Somebody in our neighborhood makes vegan hot chocolate. I didn't even know that was a thing. And it was great.
Yes. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Neighbor Next Door. We hope it motivated you to get out there and be a good neighbor. Please subscribe to our show so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you have ideas, questions, or topics that you think would be helpful to us, please contact us through our website.
One topic that they might add would be more banjo in all episodes.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes, they should. They should. But why don't we just have them email that to you? I just feel like that just needs to be in your inbox. That's what you need.
Okay, all right. We'll see.
So our website, www.neighboringmovement.org, where there's lots of other free stuff and resources you can check out. Want to give a shout out to our editing work that was done by Vistifer,
the AmeriCorps volunteer who saves our day every single week.
Oh, every single day, actually.
Every single week, he saves our day. That's how it works.
Our background music is written and performed by Brutal Bear after hours and hours of composing and orchestrating in Adam and Ashley's garage. And that's it.
That's right, folks. With that, we must sign off.
So until next time, happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.